the whole spoiler nonsense where, you know, Dave is of the... I should say this.
Go ahead, say what you have to say.
No, but Dave's of the mind, like, you shouldn't talk about the Super Bowl for a month just in case somebody's just in case somebody's on a flight somewhere and didn't see the game and doesn't want it spoiled for them.
A month.
Or some ridiculous nonsense.
The Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. Now here's your host, Dave Dameshek.
Hi and hello, football fans. It's your old pal Dave Dameshek. What's going down? Hope all's well wherever you are. Welcome to episode number 80 of the Dave Dameshek Football Program. Available, as you just heard, on iTunes and at davedameshek.nfl.com. And speaking of that blog page, why don't you go there now? Because along with our past podcasts and a new NFL, our animated segment that everybody seems to enjoy, a new piece. I've been promising it for some time now. It analyzes with, you know, training camps underway, college football season is nigh. I lay out for you the five college programs that I feel have that are lousy, that have produced the most good NFL caliber talent. And so dig into that one and review my work, and feel free to add your comments, your criticisms, and so on right there in the comments section. All right, so listen, episode 80 is upon us here, and seated to my immediate right, ready to help us break it all down. Like I say, training camps are underway. But I want to talk about movies, too, on something that we discussed at the end of episode number 79. My main man from NFL.com and NFL Network, it's Adam Rank. What's the poop, fella?
Hey, boss. Thanks for having me.
Sure
appreciate,
thing.
Appreciate you having me on.
Of course. Of course. Always it's a pleasure to have you. And like I say, at NFL.com, you're kibitzing about the Olympics because they're underway now. You're talking about what NFL players would do well in the Olympics. I want to talk about that. Like I say, the movie issue, Peyton Manning. You hear he's at Denver. Record crowd to go watch the Denver Broncos. Which I feel like if I was John Elway, would be a slap in my face. I didn't do enough for you people. This guy hasn't even shown up on the field in the orange jersey yet in a regular season game. And he gets your attention and I didn't do it. And he has the juice. He could kick him out, too. He should apparently he's a decent fella, because if it were me and I were in charge of the team, I would set up certain restrictions to make sure that something like that couldn't happen.
Yeah, I would be interested to see what would happen if, let's say, Peyton Manning went out and had a little bit of success this season. They went on and did the unthinkable and won a Super Bowl. What would happen right there? Would John Elway, at what point of this would John Elway become jealous and then have to be like, he's good, but it's not like he's won back-to-back titles. You know, that's the standard here in Denver that I set off, is winning back-to-back titles. But, you know,
I'd love to know that. That would be a great. I'd love to get in depth with that on various levels with him. Do you think Peyton Manning is as good as you? I mean, his body of work, do you think he stacks up against you? I'd like to talk with him about that. Wilk Tie behind the glass, sitting in for Black Tie today. Why don't you do that? See if you can get John Elway on the line before the end of the podcast here. In the meantime,
not
we'll say
hello.
Thank you.
Yep.
In the meantime, you can track me down at Dameshek on Twitter. Rank is at Adam Rank, and joining us in Studio 66 to help us with this very important movie conversation and beyond, from around the league, one of our favorite guys now. He's emerging. He and his pal Mark Sessler have been joining us for debates, and we're going to debate, like I say, some movies in just a minute here. It's Dan Hanzus, and first of all, you track him down at Dan Hanzus. And again, Around the League is the blog there at NFL.com. Breaking news, up to the minute. Always delivered with a bit of mirth. What's happening there, Hanzus?
Dave, Adam, thanks for having me, and it's good to push Sessler
into
the background.
That's my line.
What?
Thanks for having me. You don't come in here and start stealing my line. Yes!
Just don't steal Dane Cook's, or for that matter, Daniel Tosh's material.
It's a killer response. I won't use it again, Rick.
Oh. All right. So, Hanzus, how are we, first of all? And what do you make of this Peyton Manning jazz? I guess this is the story of training camp.
It was. Both me and Greg Rosenthal wrote extensively about it yesterday on the ATL blog. I mean, they had a record crowd in Denver, number 18 jerseys everywhere. Guy got a huge ovation just coming on the field, as you might expect. People glowing about his arm strength. I mean, this is the honeymoon period's on. And I do agree on Elway because that's his town, you know. And it's not even, there's no one even close, you know. This is his world. If Manning steals,
of course,
the Thunder,
it's always worth. I feel like it always should be mentioned. Rank mentions the standard of two straight Super Bowls. You know, the yardstick, and I think it is very important, right at the very top of all the factors when you start to judge who's the greatest QB of all time. I think it matters greatly that you win Super Bowls. I like when people say, well, it's a team game. But it's also a quarterback league, as we always hear, and the quarterback is the most has the most pressure on it of any position in any sport and so on. So, therefore, winning titles does count, you know.
It does, yeah.
Dan Marino didn't. It doesn't invalidate his career. However, John Elway, in a lot of cases, I think people have him ahead of Dan Marino because he won those two Super Bowls. But let's keep in mind that those wouldn't have happened. That was Terrell Davis's team at that point, not John Elway winning those Super Bowls. I think we can agree on that, yes.
I like to imagine a scenario where, you know, Manning is on the podium in February holding the trophy and Elway snatches it away and is like, this one's also for John.
Excellent, excellent. All right, fellas, so we are the Olympics, the Summer Games are upon us, and like I say again, look on NFL.com. Rank's got a piece up there about the – what were the conclusions? What NFL players would make good Olympians? All that of them,
well,
I guess.
Who wouldn't? Of course. Any of these guys. It always – it strikes me as amusing when you have all these periphery sports that the United States isn't good at, because we were talking about what is the United States still an underdog in? Because you look back in the 80s, we had the hockey team that was an underdog. Yeah. Maybe Winter Olympics, you know, you get more of that. But the Summer Olympics, we're supposed to dominate everything, I say, except for soccer. And just once, I feel like we should just take our best football players and then put them out and then have them train for like 2 years. And then, okay, once and for all, we're going to go out and show everybody we're better than you at this. We'll go out, we'll humiliate you in it. And then our guys can go back to play football.
That's what I've been saying about the specifically about the basketball. We should have only done it once.
Yes.
1992. Only, here, world, here's the lesson. You want to see when we give you the full power of what we're capable of? Deal with that. You beat everybody by 300 points a game. Then you go back, and then you just retire. That's it. We're never doing it again. Now you've lesson learned. However, they had to keep. They went back to the well too many times. Mm-hmm. Then they lost. Now we are not the same untouchable group that we want.
If we would have had the 92 Dream Team and then after that started putting high school teams out there,
that's
it would have been a perfect
point.
No,
you just keep putting the collegiates out there,
and
then it's our
on
JV. You keep we're offering you our JV. And by the way, that JV would medal pretty much every time and win the gold some of the time as well. And then you have the fallback that, well, of course, we sent our second-rate players to you.
Our college
players. Don't make us send our – you want the superstars again? Because we're going to do it. We'll do it. All right, I didn't think so. Yeah. Now go play the best players from Duke and Michigan and UCLA. Your yap shut.
The one that gets me mad, though, is the World Cup, because I know we could take that bastard down if they let us. But we have – if we just shut down the sporting world in 2014 and just put all our efforts into that.
That's what I'm saying. You have
the World Cup.
Yeah, the World Cup for soccer. That's what I'm saying. It's like
how could we win that?
Just take all our greatest athletes.
That's what I was saying. If we took our NFL players.
Oh, our football players. Our NFL players.
We took our NFL players and said, look, you're not going to play football. Chris Johnson, you're not playing football. We're going to teach you how to play soccer.
This is essentially what you're describing is the superstars. Remember the old ABC TV show?
Absolutely.
Where they would take professional athletes and have them play each other's sports. That was the best TV show. Top five TV show of all time, I think, really. Super. That, you know, people want to talk about the real world and Survivor and everything else. That may well be the world's first ever reality show.
Well, Battle of the Network Stars was better.
It's a fun debate to have. Cosell was great on Battle of the Network Stars, and you know, who can ever forget watching Gabe Kaplan, Mr. Kater, flop around in the pool trying to get back into his inflatable canoe.
But he was a sprinter. He beat Bob Conrad.
And, of course, the highlight was always when they would do the dunk tank and try and dunk each other. And, mm-hmm. But, listen, superstars, there's nothing better than the obstacle course at the end when Tony Dorsett and Lynn Swann went head-to-head. That was gangbusters TV. Then they would do teams. They would do the Dallas Cowboys versus the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine? I mean, the Battle of the Network Stars would never happen either. These A-list guys would never be willing to jeopardize their health. Same thing. Can you imagine now, like, yeah, hey, New York Giants, you're all going and doing the superstars. They would be like, no, talk to my agent. You get Steve Weatherford and some other people who are willing to play, you know.
Did that play into that they needed the money then? Because I'm sure they
I don't know, paid. Probably, yeah. That probably is the answer to that.
Pro football players, probably, yeah.
I think the Olympics, I find it strange and ironic that people who don't like sports love the Olympics. Namely, I guess what I'm largely talking about, women, but it seems like people are excited. People love the opening ceremony. I get that. Mo Damashek loves that. She and the old man, the opening, don't call the opening ceremonies on, like it's some holy event that's taking place. The most boring thing in the history of TV. One of the five worst TV shows of all time is watching an endless stream of people in ridiculous outfits parade around a track. I don't get that thing. And then people come out and do a choreographed dance and everybody oohs and ahs, and I'm kind of underwhelmed by it. But then you get into the competitions, and there are these fringy sports that you would only see on Wide World of Sports a generation ago.
Like soccer?
Yeah, well, that's a good one. Yeah, or like I say, luge and all the biathlon and all that nonsense, all the hokum, I don't know, curling. And yet everybody within a week is an expert on all of them. I don't like what I'm seeing out of the Australians in the luge event there. You know, I don't get that. And as I've said before and I'll say again, I challenge someone within the sound of my voice to do it. I'm too lazy to act on this. Maybe you could do this one, Rank. I contend that if you merely announce that you're on the U.S. luge team, they'll take you and maybe ask for you to bring a friend, too. How many lugers can there be in this country? Two or three? If you merely say, yeah, I'm willing to do, I'll get on the sled and ride it down that course. Like, all right, you're in. Yeah, I don't have to make the team. You're on the team by saying you're willing to do it. You're in.
Well, growing up in Corona, California, just outside of Anaheim, I lived on a pretty steep hill. And we'd take our skateboards to the top, and we would you would just do that. Lose down. So I do actually have some experience there.
You got a background.
I think it'd be pretty good.
Good. And you were a natural. You were the best in the neighborhood. You don't have to be, by the way. You have to do, again, is just be willing to do it.
All you have to do is be heavier than everybody else, and you're the best.
Did the hill have a really cool name, like Devil's Backbone or something
I wish it did. It's sweet.
Again, this is a winter thing, and it's the same course as the losers. But bobsledding, not enough attention paid to this. Is the fact that the redundancy, one of the most ridiculous things in all of sport, is the bobsled, that they have a two-man and a four-man. What do we need the four-man for? The two-man is, there's one guy who steers it, and then there's the guy in behind who pushes it. Now, what would make that even better? Let's do a separate one where we have two extra guys. They also have to jump in. Why? What are we learning by adding those two extra guys? Is there a difference in skill? There can't be any different requirement to be good at it, right? To be good at the two-man versus the four-man. It just seems like a way to get two more of your chums a medal, you know? Hey, I'm the best steerer of a bobsled in the world. Like, hey, you guys...
What do you do?
Hey, Hanzus and Rank, you want to come over to Switzerland, be in the Olympics with me this year?
Do the second and third guy even get a medal?
I hope they have to split it at best.
It's like a ride along program.
It's ridiculous. So, what are you looking forward to these games though?
Yeah, I always enjoy the Olympics. Yeah,
it's fine. Yeah, I do. I like the swimming. That should be interesting with Phelps and what's his name? I don't know. Ryan Lochte, I believe, mm-hmm. is his name. That's about all I know about the Olympics right now. But like the rest of the world, I shall be an expert inside of a fortnight on everything.
Yeah.
Rhythmic gymnastics is gone now, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did they get rid of that one?
Got rid of that. Got rid of softball.
But they keep... Oh, really?
Yeah,
softball's not a sport anymore, really.
Yeah.
Baseball either. got rid of baseball, too.
Well, baseball's been gone for a while, which I don't get that. I accept it. Is that because baseball likes its own world baseball
thing? No, I think it's because no one – I mean, it was Japan and Cuba Korea. And the U.S., and that was it.
Korea.
Yeah.
Right.
And are we good at boxing anymore?
Ooh. What's boxing?
Is Cuba still the number one in the world? Cuba used to always win the golds in that. This is a great Olympic. This is a great Olympic preview for everybody right now.
They're really.
I don't know.
Do they have MMA yet? It's the UFC type.
Stop
fighting.
With that nonsense, Frank. Please. I don't know. I know.
I want to see professional wrestling in the Olympics.
Ooh, that'd be fun.
That would be outstanding.
One thing we know for sure is that the Russians would be terrific. Nikolai Volkov and the rest of them.
The Iron Sheik.
Yeah, yeah. Where was Kamala from? Somewhere
Uganda,
in Africa.
He was a Uganda Janet. Yeah.
He'd be good. So Uganda would be a dark horse there. They might medal there.
How is Japan going to replace Yokozuna? Rest in peace.
Well, you know what? It is truly, as we've just realized here, it's a global sport. It does deserve its due. All right. Real quick, I wanted to tell you some good news. I had yesterday. Well, first of all, one was on Wednesday, and then one was on Thursday. On Wednesday, I ate what was one of the 10 finest peaches in the history of the globe. And then on Thursday.
How do you quantify that?
Then.
Who's ranking this?
Then Thursday, I had a peach that was one of the top 4 or 5 peaches ever. In other words. The fruit of the year competition, which is, it's interesting, you know, I give out the Shecky's at the end of every year for a number of categories. The Shecky for fruit of the year, I mean, it what's crazy about it was I gave legitimate thought to retiring the category because the pineapple has been so dominant lately. I mean, the pineapple has won 4 straight fruit of the year titles, and that's getting to be like, all right, the dynasty is getting a little, you know, let's just call it quits here, murder rule or whatever you want to call it. Then about 3 months ago, I picked up the old classic, the old standard, the fruit of the century, when we went from 20th to 21st, the apple was named fruit of the century. I picked up an apple, bit into it, and all of a sudden the competition was back on. Had a couple of delicious. I've had some delicious batches of strawberries, but these peaches. I mean, my head's spinning. And the exciting thing is, we still have 5 months to go. So bring it on. Hey, it's not too late. Cantaloupe, get in on this one. Red grapes.
How do they judge?
What do you have to say? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm talking about?
How
Nectarines,
do they judge?
Kumquats, and so on.
I don't sleep on the apple ever.
And also, let me just tell you this too, Rank. You know how they say there's no accounting for taste? Mm-hmm. I'd like to add a new title. You know, I'm already the uniform monitor. Mm-hmm. I'm also your fantasy pal. Mm-hmm. I have my doctorate in mustard from the from Poupon University. Mm-hmm. I legitimately am a doctor.
Of course,
I have a
yes.
doctorate. I'd now like to add, you know, in the spirit of when people say no accounting for taste, I would like to now be the taste accountant. and so add that hat to my already
taste
full,
accountant.
Yeah. To sure. my to the hat check to whatever I'm trying to say here. I don't know. But anyway, all right. So that's it. Rank, what did you have to say there?
No, I'm just wondering how you can pick out the one of the 10 greatest of the globe. Like, where is this list located? There was number 6 came from Madagascar in 34. And it honestly, people down there raved for years.
I don't know.
Make the list. I want to see the list of the 10 greatest.
I have a lot of lists I'm already working
on. In peach history.
I'm trying to fix things,
Frank.
I don't have time for things. I'm trying to fix a lot of different things right now. Oh, here's a fix for you that's Olympic related. You know, water polo is not half bad to watch on TV. It's a kind of an entertaining
thing.
And if you've ever tried to do it, I think I've been in a swimming pool maybe 3 times in the last decade. Weird. Since we live in L.A., I go in the sea. I frolic in the real deal. What am I going to go in the nonsense for? I don't need some synthetic nonsense. I got the genuine article right outside my door.
How often do you go into the sea?
I go as often as I possibly can, and I go take my bath. I don't just
ballpark.
You know, the Pacific Ocean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I don't just wash. It doesn't, when you go in there, it doesn't just wash off the day's soils. it rids you of all of society's ills.
Really?
I'm
that's
born anew when I come out of the sea.
In the Pacific Ocean outside of Los Angeles.
Yes.
Okay.
Why? You're being a cynic about the filth, the condition of the sea?
Perhaps.
Why? Because you live down in Orange County, Mr. Fancy Pants. All right.
Which is even worse.
I would just like to point out that out of a podcast that we try to keep under an hour, we've spent approximately 5 minutes on peaches, fruit, and Dave's bathing habits.
Right. Oh, look. It's still... Black tie's not here.
I can barely.
But his reach is still there.
It's amazing because I can barely make out what he's saying from a Wilk tie from way up there up on Mount Pius. Excuse us, human beings, for having a conversation, Wilk tie. I didn't realize you'd taken out summer rental up there on Mount Pius. Now, what I was going to say is water polo is a good sport, but that is one that I feel like it needs. A name change, because it's a bad name. Everybody makes the lame joke about, well, the horse is all drowned or whatever they say, you know, whatever the crack. It's not that good. Right? No, my point was that it's a bad joke.
Okay.
So, but water polo, it's a bad thing. Like, it's taking polo and then saying, like, but it's water. You know, it's a terrible, I don't like that.
Oh,
I think,
see.
Like, it would do much better if it had its own unique kind of thing. Like, it should be called, like, slick ball or something like that, you know? Think about it.
I'll think about it. I think it needs a new name. Yes,
let's work on it.
Slick ball. No.
You don't like slick ball?
Nah.
All right, listen, I'm spitballing.
Okay, that's good.
Hydro, something hydro.
Yeah, now we're cooking hydro with gas.
Power hydro.
Okay, we'll worry about that. Right now, I mentioned at the end of 79, a Gangbusters episode was 79. We visited with Pittsburgh Post-Gazette Steeler beat writer Ed Bouchette, a favorite of mine, and so it was fun to kibitz with him. And who else did we kibitz with there?
The Brickashaw.
What am I thinking of? Yeah, number 60 from the New York Jets. He said that they're ready for greatness. Is that what he said? Was that his quote there, Hanzoos?
He said, we have greatness written all over us.
Written all over us.
Yeah, whatever that means.
I don't know exactly, but so
be it. Are
they
selling advertising on the uniforms there?
It might be.
So, all right, let's get what I mentioned at the end of the show was – because it came, it entered my brain about 2 weeks or so ago when Harrison Ford turned 70. I became reflective about his great career. You don't have to tell me, or I'm sure you, that he's had a number of not just great movies, but classics, classic roles. And to be specific, here is his list. Here is what he gets into, starting with Empire Strikes Back in 1980. He is Han Solo in Empire. Then he becomes Indiana Jones, Dr. Jones in Raiders of the Lost Ark. That's two in a row. Then he goes Rick Deckard in Blade Runner. That's three in a row, and if you just stop there, that's it. You'll never in a lifetime, and he did it three in a row. No actor has, that's another thing. Has anybody ever played three characters so cool as Dr. Jones, Rick Deckard, and Han Solo? I don't know.
It's just like transcendent, like film characters.
Three straight, though. Then he goes Return of the Jedi. All right, not the greatest, certainly not the best of the Star Wars trilogy, but a very good picture. Then he does Temple of Doom, which I've argued here on the show before is a great, great picture. Then he finishes off this streak at number six with Witness, John Book, when he goes and lives with the Amish and the whole murder story. Great picture. Then it stops with Mosquito Coast. But so the six movies he goes, Witness, Temple of Doom, Jedi, Blade Runner, Raiders, Empire Strikes Back. I say the greatest streak in movie history for one actor. And I say to you, fellas, and I say to everyone within the sound of my voice, how say you? Is anybody, and don't give me the hokum, but I just don't want to hear from you, Rank, Hanzoos, Wilk Tie, and anyone out there on Twitter. A lot of people have already dropped me a line about this subject, and I appreciate it. Don't give me the nonsense about with caveats, like, well, so-and-so had three great ones, and then he did that bad movie, but then he did four more really good. No, that's not a streak. You understand. If Joe DiMaggio had gotten a hit in his 57th straight game, his hit streak would have been 57 games. But he didn't get a hit. We're not playing what if here. We're playing what is, you understand. Now, with that caveat out of the way, Rank, can anybody beat that?
Tom Cruise.
Lay it on me.
Tom Cruise starts off with Risky Business.
All right. That's a – okay. All right. I'll take it.
Yes.
I'll take, but I'm just saying, but again, remember how high the bar is.
Yeah.
Solo.
Now,
Rick Deckard.
Now, wait.
Dr. Jones.
Is
it, all right, I'm just telling you.
Is it
I don't want
characters? If it's character-driven, you're not beating them.
I'm just telling
that
you
three,
that I'm just letting you, reminding you where the bar is. Go, please.
But those are, you're going on the movies.
Okay,
the movies
Risky Business, one.
All the Right Moves.
Okay, I'll count that.
Legend.
I have a hard time signing off on Legend, but it's better. You know what I'll say about Legend? Better than most people think it is.
Yes.
That's the fantasy picture if you haven't seen it. The thing that's good, what is it, the devil guy? It's not the devil exactly, but it's essentially a devilish type character. Pretty good bad guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's pretty good. And then he goes to Top Gun.
All right.
Color of Money.
Okay.
Cocktail.
Next. What do you got, Hanzeus? I mean, that's
wow.
Cocktail? Cocktail should be on the... You want to sully what I just said with Cocktail?
Coughlin's Law?
Cocktail. Is that the end? Is that the end of Cruise's?
Then he did Rain Man.
All right. Well, I'm sorry. Cocktail ruins it. If Legend didn't, Cocktail does. Come on. Come
on. Cocktail?
Right. Wake up, fella. Wake up.
Flanagan. Best friend in the world.
Let me tell you what some of the great thoughts I got here. John Alverson dropped me a line on Twitter. He says Clint Eastwood. He starts with for a few dollars more, which is a good start. But then this is where it falls apart for me here. I'm looking on the computer here for a few dollars more.
What year
1965. Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. 2.
Mm-hmm.
The Witches, I don't know what that is. Hang 'em High, Coogan's Bluff. There's another. Oh, Coughlin's Law, not Coogan. Where Eagles Dare. I don't know those movies. It's hard for me to really judge. Two Mules for Sarah. Play Misty for me. I don't know. It doesn't pass muster where I'm coming from. Stephen Greenwell, one of our longtime pals, says, "What about Will Smith?" He throws out Will Smith starting in 1996. Independence Day. Men in Black, Enemy of the State, Wild Wild West, Terrible.
Whoa.
That's where you
live. Wild
see? West you see how tough this is? And by the way, I don't consider Independence
how
Day.
How dare you?
Sorry, Rank. I know that you get crazy about that one.
If you're going to see...
Men in Black doesn't exactly hold up if you've seen that recently. Legend of Bagger Vance, Ali isn't very good.
No.
Ali loses the joy of the man.
Right.
So what was the point of making that picture? A rare miss by otherwise great director. So, yeah, so Will Smith doesn't work. Do you want to try? What were you chiming in with there, Rank?
No, I was going to say Independence Day.
Oh, you're going to try and defend that. I don't want to hear about it again. I've heard your defense of it, and it doesn't work. So, Social Assassin drops me a line on Twitter. Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman, he goes with State of Grace, JFK, Dracula, True Romance, Romeo is Bleeding, and Leon. I don't know what Leon is. Do you?
Leon was the assassin? It was about an assassin? Is that right?
Nah.
I think you're thinking The Professional, where
the guy's name
is Leon.
Oh, okay.
Maybe that's... Is he in that? Maybe that is what he's trying...
I don't think
Romeo is Bleeding is all right. True Romance is terrific. Dracula's pretty good, although that's another picture that doesn't exactly hold up if you look at it right now.
I don't know about Dracula.
JFK's fine. Ish. What's State of Grace? I don't know. One rings a bell.
Yeah, it turns out Leon is The Professional. It's the same.
Oh, yes. The Professional. I see.
Technically
okay.
Called Leon
Vindication.
Colon, The Professional.
That's a pretty good run, though.
That's a good one.
That is a pretty nice run. I mean, listen, it doesn't beat Ford. Come on. Doesn't beat that, but that's the best one so far. Andrew McCann, 8 on Twitter, says Leonardo DiCaprio. He's not the first one to bring up DiCaprio either.
Mm-hmm.
He goes Gangs of New York. Catch Me If You Can, The Aviator.
Wait, whoa, you're
The Departed.
Catch Me If You Can,
fantastic movie.
Fantastic movie.
A fantastic movie. You're going with a fantastic is what we're saying.
What, Catch Me If You Can?
Yeah,
it's a
nice
a
period picture, but doesn't it? I mean, the period is done better by Mad Men, right? I mean, I know that's.
But the reason
I know that's
that
not
movie
the standard.
Isn't good isn't the fact
is that
that
a movie?
It's a period picture. It's that it's a good movie.
I think it's.
And,
I think it's pretty good.
And
I
DiCaprio,
don't love it.
He's pretty great in it too, DiCaprio.
Okay, but are we signing off on Gangs of New York?
Yeah,
I would.
The Aviator, The Departed, Blood Diamond. What's Andrew Ireland? Oh, maybe that's somebody else's name. Never mind. So yeah, Blood Diamond. That's all right. That's a respectable offering you've come up with there.
Part of the problem is that with this is that
so far I've heard nothing that dissuades me from my original point.
Harrison Ford's movies, iconic.
Well, here's the
great
argument.
Franchises.
I don't want to. I'll play devil's advocate to my. I'll play devil's damashek to my own point. I don't think this is a strike against it exactly, but he's in two franchise pictures in this run of a half dozen gems.
The work is done for him, in a sense.
Yeah. But I don't think I don't think ultimately you can discount the work, though, right?
No, I agree with you.
You can't discount DiCaprio because he tied his wagon to Scorsese for.
I guess it's
years,
sort of the same thing. Yeah. Hanzus, how say you? You have anything?
I have a great one, and I think it's Ford's nemesis in this battle. And we're starting with where Rank ended with Cocktail. I'm starting with Godfather, and I'm going to say the actor after this. Godfather, The Conversation, Godfather Part Two, Dog Day Afternoon, and The Deer Hunter. John Cazale. He did five movies his entire life, died of bone cancer, and I think 76 or so. And they were all nominated for Best Picture.
John Cazale is a great answer. Several people dropped me a line about him on Twitter. That's a tough one. Five, and that's not just his streak. Those are the only pictures he was ever in. Yeah, he's a tragic story. Cazale, he dies. He's a young guy, and he's Fredo. In case you don't know who he is, that's his most famous role. Of course, he's Fredo in the Godfather pictures, and. There's a great documentary a couple of years ago about Cazale that came out. And, he was married to Meryl Streep, which I didn't realize.
And one thing also to add, and this, I think, helps his case, too, and Streep said in the documentary, she says, one thing he taught me was not to just take anything that's offered, you know, make a really careful decision about the projects you get involved with. And this guy just had the magic touch. You know?
And Nicolas Cage, the relative, the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola, obviously took that same advice to heart.
Somebody got lost in translation.
Oh, wait. Yeah, maybe not. Wilktai, you have anybody you want to throw out there?
I got to say, I agree with Harrison Ford overall. The only person that I can come up with who compares is Tom Hanks. He's got a 10-year run.
I've looked up Tom Hanks.
All
he
right,
does
but
not.
Here,
go
listen,
ahead. Make your case.
I know what you're saying. There's sort of two hiccups, but I'll start with Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. Counts.
Now, You've Got Mail. I'm not saying that's my favorite movie, yikes. But
it is not a good movie.
In terms of chick flick romantic comedies, that's one of the best ever. It's one of the best
what?
Ever.
What?
Yeah.
No.
What are better? What's better than
Sleepless
that?
In Seattle is okay. more widely
one.
Regarded than You've Got Mail,
yes,
which is his.
One. There's one. I
I'll
know,
tell you a good
one.
A good mainstream romantic comedy of the last 10, 12 years. 2 Weeks Notice with Hugh Grant and Sandra Bullock. That's a nice picture. It is. It's
yeah,
good.
I know. You're right.
It's not bad.
I'm agreeing with you. Yeah, that is.
When Harry Met Sally. How about that one? I know that's romantic comedies. What else counts as one? Burt Reynolds and Goldie Hawn did a couple of charming passes at that sort
all
of
right,
thing.
All right.
Go
even,
ahead. Okay, so forget
you,
that one.
Even if you stop there and restart on the next film, that's Toy Story 2.
Okay.
Green Mile.
Love it. Underrated.
Castaway.
I don't love that, but okay.
Road to Perdition.
Love Road to Perdition. Don't know why that picture isn't more highly regarded.
I agree. And then Catch Me If You Can.
Paul Newman's last great turn in Road to Perdition. And Daniel Craig, a relative unknown, is one of the bad guys in that picture. It's great. There's something – the pace of it is probably not for everybody, but it's a little glacial in places. But that feeds how good it is. Great period picture there.
I agree.
And then you're counting Catch Me If You Can.
Yes.
It's a pretty nice run. So wait, that's one.
That's five. You Saving Private Ryan.
Well, I can't allow it. I'm sorry. You've Got Mail ruins it. I
okay, but fine. Ignore that. Toy Story 2 is one. Green Mile, Castaway, Road to Perdition, Catch Me If You Can.
What comes after Catch Me If You Can?
The Lady Killers.
I don't even know what Lady Killers.
He was in it. Wasn't he? He's in Band of Brothers in that time.
That doesn't count, Rank. That's TV. We're talking movies, please.
TV doesn't count. Why shouldn't TV count?
Because we're talking. What do you mean? Because we're talking about the standard is movies.
Silver screen.
Does Bo Jackson's do his home run totals have anything to do with his football career?
No, but is he considered a good athlete because he played football and baseball?
That's not the conversation, Rank. We're talking about. We're saying
Bo Jackson. Narrow. Okay, so anything that could.
Let's talk about Bo Jackson's football career at Auburn and how he did in the SEC. Yeah, okay. Let's talk about that. You remember that home run he hit for the Royals? Like what? What does that have to do with anything? It doesn't make sense, Rank.
You don't. No, he's still acting.
No,
it's akin to if you don't want to count Herschel Walker's USFL or Reggie White's USFL numbers. That's fine if you want to be like that. But if you're going to talk about his entire football career, yes, you would talk about those things.
Can I?
It was
tell
just
you?
Different. Or if you talk about a guy who played in college, you want to talk about Warren Moon playing in the CFL and playing in the NFL or playing at Yeah, there's different things. You're still doing basically the same thing, but you're just doing it in a different medium, so to speak. Because if you counted TV, Anthony Michael Hall goes on a huge run, vacation, 16 candles,
great.
Breakfast Club,
okay.
Weird
now,
Science.
You got my attention. We're four in here.
Weird Science, but then he goes to Saturday Night Live.
Well, I don't care about Saturday Night Live. What comes after that in movies?
Some terrible movie.
What, Johnny Be Good?
No, it's before Johnny Be Good.
That is a shame. Yeah, that's too bad. He was on a real run. He's one of those guys who is left off the list. He was pubescent. You know, they always talk about kid actors and child actors and that they don't translate. It's weird when they...
He did Out of Bounds.
I don't even know what that is. Out of Bounds.
Yeah, it's some. I think it was some serious movie.
Boy, that's some streak he went on there.
But it's... And you don't like Johnny Be Good, but, and that's fine. That's pretty impressive.
What preceded Vacation? Nothing? Is that his first picture, probably, Vacation?
Six-pack.
Six-pack? Is that the one with Kenny Loggins? Kenny Rogers?
Kenny Rogers, yeah.
I might count that one just to throw it in there. That's...
Okay, let's count six-pack.
He's in the Kenny Rogers... Listen, you know what? You got to add it to the list of it's not as good as Harrison Ford's.
No.
The guy who mentions Clint Eastwood, now that I'm looking at it, he misses the range. He's not in the right place there. You start with... I don't count Magnum Force, but you go, maybe you do even. Thunderbolt and Lightfoot is great. The Iger Sanction, Outlaw Josie Wales, The Enforcer, The Gauntlet, Every Which Way But Loose, Escape from Alcatraz. That's a pretty nice run there.
Was that a TV movie, Escape from Alcatraz?
No.
Or was that
no.
That was a movie.
TV movie.
I'm asking. I'm asking the question.
Bronco Billy I don't like, but then Any Which Way You Can, Firefox is lousy. But, yeah, that's a nice run for Eastwood. He's got to be in there somewhere.
Where would Heartbreak Ridge fall in that?
Not on the good side is where Heartbreak Ridge would fall. We haven't mentioned a single woman.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Heartbreak Ridge is a good movie.
It's fine.
If you're going to watch one movie about the Grenada conflict.
I can't argue with you on that. I shan't argue with you on that. We haven't mentioned a woman, so Michelle Pfeiffer comes to mind. What about this? Here's not a bad run for her. In fact, a really pretty nice run. She goes Grease 2. Which I'll make the case. I'm in the minority. Songs in Grease 2 are better than the songs in Grease 1. It's a better picture. I like that.
Wow, this is rough.
With Anthony, with Adrian
Zemed.
It's not Grease 2.
God.
I gotta go back. Back to school again.
Why don't you
My
go
sister
back?
Debbie
You're
and I.
Saying Grease 2 is on this category, but Catch Me If You Can.
I know.
That's right. My sister Debbie and I watched Grease 2 roughly 111 times in our lifetime. Then you go Scarface, Into the Night, Lady Hawk, Sweet Liberty. I don't know what that is. Witches of Eastwick. Okay, so that streak's broken. Witches of Eastwick. All right. Married to the Mob, Tequila Sunrise, Dangerous Liaisons. Fabulous Baker's Boy is great. Russia House, I don't know, Frankie and Johnny, and Batman Returns. Do you know in Batman Returns, this is an interesting thing about the movie-making process. I thought this was a spectacular deed on her part. You know, she has the whip. Mm-hmm. This is the one when the penguin's in, DeVito's penguin, and Michael Keaton, his last turn is Batman. She goes into a department store after hours, and she takes out her whip, and she goes, and she, you might recall, she knocks the mannequins off of three or four mannequins in a row with her whip. Knocks the heads off all these mannequins. She did that on the first take.
What?
Isn't that amazing? Did it. Not a camera trick or anything.
Top.
She just learned to use the whip, which also reminds me of the fact that the greatest fight in movie history is in Flash Gordon when Prince Bear and Flash are on Voltan's his palace, and they go out on the floating disc that shoots up spikes and everything. It floats. It rotates and undulates so you could fall down, and these spikes come up and down out of the ground so you could get stuck or anything else. But the core of the fight is that they both have whips, and they have a whip fight.
Nice.
A whip fight? Can you imagine a whip fight?
Well, first of
in
all,
a finite amount of space.
How far apart were they? But they're like 30 yards apart, darn it?
30 yards? No. 30 feet, maybe.
Yeah.
Whip fight.
I gotta figure they wouldn't have the Hawkmen fight in that too much because they can fly, you know? So the thing is so uneven, and a whip fight, yeah, that would be hard. A fight on a floating disc, like, yeah, that'd be terrible. And then they have the spike. Like, how many of those fights ended up with just, they're 2 seconds in and some guy just falls off?
In real life.
Oh, they're like, oh, that was terrible. Like, nobody at some point goes, we should make it a little bit more competitive.
Can I tell you something, though? I want to throw out here, and then we'll wrap this up. Bill Murray. Listen to this stretch that Bill Murray goes on. Starting with, let's say, in 1990, although I can back it up as far as 1984-ish. He goes Ghostbusters, then Nothing Lasts Forever, which I don't even know what that is. But then Razor's Edge, Little Shop of Horrors, Scrooged. Ghostbusters 2 is not great, so let's say we cut it off at Ghostbusters 2. Here's the start of the streak for you. 1990, Quick Change. Great comedy picture.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, What About Bob?
Fantastic.
Spectacular. Groundhog Day, one of the most clever, high-concept comedies of all time.
Easily.
Mad Dog and Glory. Tough, but pretty good, and he's great in it. It's the first time we see him sort of take that side of things. He's sort of straight and sort of a bad guy and interesting, at least. And so, all right, that's the one that's dicey. Ed Wood, Kingpin. What a run that is. Kingpin for me is his greatest role in a career of great roles. His whatever he's in that picture 15, 20 minutes is among the funniest things I've ever seen in my life. Bill Murray is one of the funniest things when they are at the alleys and he's writing things on the board to Woody Harrelson with the fake hand and everything, and he's writing stuff up on the board and Woody Harrelson looks over to see if it's the girl, and he realizes it's Bill Murray, and Bill Murray hides his face, and it's some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen.
And that glorious comb over.
Yeah, the comb over and everything.
His commercials too.
Yes.
All right.
It's all, Quick Change, What About Bob, Groundhog Day, Mad Dog and Glory, Ed Wood, Kingpin is a 6-movie run that I stand by. Any argument there? That, I think that's your number two right there. That doesn't beat
Mad
Harrison
Dog and
Ford.
Glory is a little dicey in the middle of there, but
it's not great. Yeah. It's not great, but it's more watchable than it's the hokum that you've thrown out though is it doesn't compare. I mean, this is De Niro, Uma Thurman, David Caruso. It's at least a pretty good cast.
And it's harder, I feel like, to have 5 great comedies in a row. I mean, what he pulled off. That's a great run.
Rank.
I'm looking back at Tom Cruise, because if we're just going 5 with his Risky Business, All the Right Moves, Legend, Top Gun, Color of Money, you stop it right there. That's good 5. Forgiving Anthony Michael Hall 6-pack with Vacation, 16 Candles,
Breakfast
Club.
I'm not going to give him 6-pack for real. Kenny Rogers is a stock car driver racing for the good of his family. I don't think so. The interesting one is Wilk Ties. You do get in there with Toy Story 2, Green Mile, Castaway, Road to Perdition. You just can't count You've Got Mail, nor can you count It's a Great
Run.
But
You've Got Mail is before that. You've Got Mail, you can rule out, start with Toy Story 2, and you still have 5
great
ones.
Well, the one who, Tom Hanks' name has come up more often than anybody else's with this debate. And the other, that's even, you brought up the second run that he has. The first run is the one everybody holds up. League of Their Own, Sleepless in Seattle, Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, Apollo 13, Toy Story. I don't want to count That Thing You Do, but if you do count that, then he really gets into That Thing You Do, Saving Private Ryan. That makes seven. Problem is, I don't like League of Their Own, and I don't understand why I am in the vast minority, apparently, on this. I don't like that picture. I love Lovitz in that picture. That's where, when I say at the end of every podcast, it's been a thin slice of heaven. That's what he says to Gina Davis and Lori Petty as he departs. Like, ladies, it's been a thin slice of heaven, as he leaves them in Wrigley Field. And Sleepless in Seattle is fine. I don't love that picture, but I guess it's pretty good. That's a nice run there. But then Philadelphia, Forrest Gump, Apollo, Toy Story. Nice run.
Cruz has a great second run, too, where he goes, starting in 92 to 96, A Few Good Men, The Firm, Interview with a Vampire, Mission Impossible, and Jerry Maguire.
Mission Impossible, I don't really like. Jerry Maguire's a wonderful picture, great script, better than, by the way, than the, what was his, what was the, Almost Famous. That's the one everybody loves so much, but I think Jerry Maguire is the better
picture.
Wait,
which? Almost Famous?
Yeah.
The Cameron Crowe movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty good one. All right, we'll put our formal list, but I still say that I am correct, right? Is there anybody who disagrees?
I don't think anybody.
Drop me a line at Damashek if you think Harrison Ford can be beat. I did look up for the record. I went through some of the legends. You would think De Niro, Pacino, Brando, guys like that. They must have done. How did they not do it? The problem is that they were too prolific. They did it. Always, each of those guys has some crummy pictures that interrupt otherwise great streaks. So you can't count it. All right. Well, listen. I think we've achieved. I'm not sure what. I don't know if we've achieved much of anything, but we'll put it to a poll there at DaveDamashek.NFL.com. So get over there and enjoy your Olympics and. Consider. Drop me a line about that, too, at Damashek. I want to know, what should we rename water polo? Slickball, you don't like, but I like hydro something.
Hydro something, I think we're on the right track. And then since we're going to do number 80.
Yes.
Before we give it to Jerry
We honor, by the way, in case you're a newcomer to the podcast, we honor the episode by naming the player in sports history who wore that number best, and 80's pretty obvious in Jerry Rice, right?
Obviously Jerry Rice, but let me say something for Henry Ellard, who was a great... Listen, Jerry Rice has Joe Montana throwing to him. Henry Ellard had Pat Hayden. He had Dieter Brock.
He played with Pat Hayden?
I forgot. I was just leading up to Dieter Brock. Boom! Dan of Thunder. Count it!
Dan of Thunder is the official scorekeeper on Dieter Brock references in the podcast.
But Henry Ellard was an underrated receiver.
Well done. Even after you started listing the QBs, I didn't get it. I was just, Pat Hayden, he's not that old a guy, is he, Henry Ellard?
No.
Can I jump in with
well
a number
done.
82?
Please.
The biggest underdog number 80 of all time, undrafted, only got a chance at camp because he went to the school the team trained at, Wayne Corbett, number 80, New York Jets.
Pretty good. Steve Largent,
his
doppelganger, as long as he had his helmet on. They both had those short legs and good hands.
What about Thrill Hill?
Tony Hill. Hill was a very good number two wide receiver for a long time behind Drew Pearson on those great Cowboys teams. I guess Plexico Burris wore number 80. I don't think he's worth mentioning. Chris Carter, yeah, dynamite.
Great. Isaac Bruce, the last L.A. Ram.
80, I guess, is about as 80 and 88 are the two classic wide receiver numbers, so I guess we could go
also
on.
Also got Andre Rison and Andre Johnson.
Ooh.
Andre Johnson,
yeah.
We're going to get plenty of these of people like, hey, what about? And you're like, okay. Like,
Jerry Rice.
Wasn't Ozzy or Kellen Winslow was number 80?
I have to imagine in my brain, I have to think about the guy and put the number on them, and then it only makes sense. 85, 86, 87, 88, 89. 80 is correct for Kellen Winslow.
Ozzie Newsome was 82.
J.J. John Jefferson wore 83. And Chaz Joyner
18.
Was 18. And Wes Chandler was also 83, right?
I thought Wes Chandler wore 82, but that sounds right.
I think he was
83.
All right. Well, listen. We've achieved, like I say.
Oh, he was 89.
Wes Chandler was?
Mm-hmm.
I'm humiliated. What a terrible end to an otherwise fine podcast. I've shamed myself. We're doing it all again, Wilktie. We're starting from scratch and doing it all over again. And this time I'm getting the Dieter Brock reference in too. All right, listen. Dan Hanzus from Around the League, again, the great blog there. Up-to-the-minute updates for you on all things NFL and beyond there. Follow him at Dan Hanzus and, of course, at Adam Rank. Track his work down there. Wilktie, last time you filled in for Blacktie behind the glass there, you plugged your Twitter handle and you actually got a fan out of it, right?
I did. Barney in Indiana.
Do it again. Let's see if we can get you to two fans.
Maybe I'll get to two.
Plug it, fella. Plug it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't say it.
Gotta pull teeth.
It's at Alex C. Wilk.
And I think we forgot to do Macchio, too. Well, we'll do that the next time. Macchio maybe has six movies in a row to compete with our list there.
Teaser.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that on a future episode. We'll be back with episode number 81 for you next week. But in the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.